Hello and welcome to the podcast for episode 113, The Watch. I'm Ronald D. Moore, executive producer and developer of the Outland television series. And I'm joined today by the very lovely Tony Graffia, who wrote this episode. Hello, Tony.
Hi.
And also Matt Roberts.
Hello, everyone.
Who also worked on this episode. This is a really interesting one for a variety of reasons. Obviously, this section of story is not entirely in the book, right? We made up quite a bit of this tale in terms of the watch, certainly, and their appearance at Lollybrook, all towards an eye of getting us into the next episode, which is the search. You know, we knew going in that in this episode, the big thing that had to happen was by the end of it, Jamie has to be captured by the Redcoats and taken away, and Claire realizes she has to go after him.
Right.
Now, when we start, the original idea on this, as I recall, when we first, way back when we were talking about, we always said there were going to be two Lollybrook episodes, right? And in
yes.
the original, didn't we say that there was going to be a plague or something? Remember? Remember that?
I believe we did.
It was like,
yes,
episode one, we said, is a family drama. And then on the second, oh, and there's the main title, The Watch. There's the worst Tony's watch. We will talk.
Yeah,
we'll talk at length about yes. Tony's watch later. But there it is, everybody.
We haven't talked about the booze either. So yeah, we might want to mention.
Yeah, we're actually drinking. We're all drinking three different whiskeys and scotches today. I am drinking Mortlach.
Yeah.
Tony.
I'm drinking Lagavulin 16. I heard that was the hardcore peaty scotch. I've been working my way up to it.
I'm at an Old Faithful Talisker, so...
There you go.
Fantastic.
I'm the only one with ice, because I'm a Californian. So, yeah, at the beginning, when we were first talking about conceptually this episode, mm-hmm. it was the watch showed up, right? But then one of the guys had
a sickness.
Had yellow fever or smallpox or something.
Right, yeah. And I think then Claire has to minister to them and heal everyone and... The watch is mentioned in the book, and we were intrigued by the concept of the watch because they're kind of like the Scottish version of the mob. But then we thought, I believe it turned into this off of Horrocks' appearance in yours, Matt, in nine.
Yeah.
Horrocks is also mentioned in the book, but we never meet him in the book, and we wanted to introduce Horrocks as a villain who sort of swindles Jamie out of the money for the information. And we really liked the actor so much.
Yeah.
He was
yeah.
fabulous.
He really popped.
He just popped in that one scene in nine. And we thought, well, maybe we can turn this more into, you know, an occupation of Lollybrook. And
yeah, I think we were still playing with the same basic backstory. The idea that the watch came here periodically in Jamie's absence. And Jenny and Ian knew them.
Right.
But in the old version, it was they came, they were going to resupply and do what they usually do, but then they brought sickness. Then yeah. Claire took over, quarantined part of Lollybrook. And wasn't it, the setup was Macquarie says, if my brother or what dies,
yes.
then you'll die or
yeah.
something. Or I'll turn Jamie into the Redcoats.
Yeah.
Right.
Then he lived, and Macquarie said, all right, look, I won't turn you in, but you got to go with us on this raid.
Exactly.
Right,
you know,
right.
As a deal, right? And that was, so the raid and the sort of the Macquarie of it all was, I think, there in the very earliest stages.
It was. Yeah. We just pulled the illness out and used the big threat is going to come up with the Horrocks of it.
Yeah.
I think we were interested in highlighting two things. The first maybe being, I remember the line that'll come up later where Jamie says, Lollybrock is the one place I thought I'd be safe. So once he gets home, I know that the readers of the book especially are expecting two episodes of just, the book is very, they have a great time at Lollybrock. They're settled in. They have a little breather before events ramp up later. But we thought maybe we go against that and play that it's the one place he thought he would be safe. And then suddenly danger literally walks through his door. And
yeah, I mean, that section of the book was very loose-limbed in terms of structure. It was kind of a little, it was episodic, little vignettes of Claire, you know, in the life of Lollybrock.
Yes. Quarter day and afterward.
All those things were there, but... You know, we were looking at it for television. It was trying to bring a structure and a frame to that whole section of the book so that we started to divide it up. Family drama, and then let's bring in a threat and use that threat to get us to the point where Jamie is taken by the Redcoats.
Yeah, we
right.
wanted to build a little tension in where there actually wasn't, you know, in the
yeah.
book. And if anybody recognizes the Great Hall at all, this is the amazing transformation of television. Lollybrook is,
yes.
Now, is
that's true.
Born from the Great Hall, and it's just so amazing what our construction crew,
oh, look at this
our
kitchen.
Art designer, it's amazing.
It's just an amazing kitchen on our set, and I believe this is the only scene that we ever shot
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So appreciate it. Whoa, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, I talked in the last podcast with Ann, we were talking about just the fact that we built all of Lollybrook on the soundstage, yeah. on the interior, but I forgot yeah. that it used to be the Great Hall,
yep.
that when Gary Steele, our production designer, designed it originally, he was thinking far enough ahead that he built it in such a way that one day it could be converted into Lollybrook, and you would never know, and you can't. You'd have no idea.
Yeah,
that that's
you
the
would.
Great Hall.
I mean, we didn't know.
We didn't.
We'd walked those. We walked those sets a thousand times, and when the first time, I had the same feeling when I walked into Lollybrook as I did the Great Hall. Is it takes your breath away and you go, wow, this used to be something else, yeah. but now you kind of forget.
It's sad in some ways. I mean, there's part of, you know, when you're on an ongoing TV series, there is some joy in going down to that familiar set mm-hmm. year after year, episode after episode. You go down to the bridge,
right.
you go down to, you know, their apartment, you go down to the hospital, you yeah. go down to the Crashdown Cafe on Roswell.
Right.
Yeah.
There's the place you kind of every once in a while you go down
right.
and, oh, I'm home. And on this show, the Great Hall just kind of vanished. And
right, right.
Castle Leah kind of vanished for us.
Well, and that's what's different about Outlander than almost any series I've ever worked on, maybe you two, is that our standing sets go away so fast that we don't ever get.
Yeah, you never
right.
get that sense.
You never
right,
get that
right.
sense of home. I mean, we keep moving because Outlander right. keeps moving.
This is the dinner scene where, you know, McQuarrie has taken his place at the head of the table. And we always, you know, I think the three of us are big fans of The Sopranos. And I remember having a lot of discussions in the writer's room about, we thought of it as, this is Tony Soprano and his gang come and stay at your house.
Yeah.
You know, Tony would sit at the head of the table and he'd put his feet on the table if he wanted and he'd give the toast. And that's the closest feeling to what we were trying to get, is the feeling of that the mob is taking over your house. And for Jamie to have to stomach it was very difficult. However, we gave McQuarrie, the head guy, a background of being a soldier in France so that he had something in common with Jamie, to where Jamie found himself kind of liking the guy. And so it was hard to be angry at him when they had a shared background in the military.
Well, that's what gelled it for me when we started talking about the fact that they were soldiers yeah. in the same war but didn't know each other and there was a commonality. Then I started to go, yeah, okay, I get it. I'm starting to really see. What I always liked about the character McQuarrie was the notion that McQuarrie was Jamie if Jamie had gone down, just made slightly yeah. different choices
right.
in his life.
Yeah.
That this could have been, Jamie could have been a swashbuckling,
right.
you know, watch/pirate kind of guy with his boys out there doing
yeah.
this kind of stuff.
But yeah, because he was already an outlaw.
He was already
it's just
an outlaw.
One step to the
yeah,
right.
He was raiding cattle.
Right.
He was already
yeah,
like
he was already
in this
doing
world.
It. Yeah.
Ex-soldier comes
right,
home
right.
looking for something to do. What do I know how to do? I know how to fight.
Yeah.
And this is perhaps the path he would have taken if he'd have stayed at Lollybrook and maybe not gone to France, or especially maybe not after he'd met Claire. Because meeting Claire also changed him and made him more of a husband and a family man, and he wants to live an honest life at home. He doesn't have these grand dreams of being a famous outlaw anymore.
Well, I think Claire maybe changed those dreams.
Claire changed,
you know, I mean,
those dreams, exactly.
You know, his dream, you know, became, you know, is all wrapped up in Claire now.
Exactly.
Here's the feet on the table. I think this is exactly what Tony would do. Tony wouldn't put his feet on the table.
No.
But Polly would.
Right,
yes.
Exactly.
And Tony would knock his shoes
yeah.
down.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what Tony would do.
Yeah. Exactly.
Meantime, one of my horses has turned up lame in shoeing on the Easy Smithy in one. I'll take a look at him for you. I'm good with horses, huh? And we wouldn't want anything to keep you from your traps. I'll tell you up and you're off.
It's a lot of subtle stuff in this episode that you're trying to figure out along the way, is when is McQuarrie suspicious of Jamie?
Yeah.
The audience knows that Jamie's clearly lying, you know, and trying to get away with it. You want to protect McQuarrie and be smart enough that he has his eye on Jamie, but he can't have his eye on Jamie too early, or then he should have said something much earlier. And it's a lot of subtleties in performance and
little looks.
Little looks, yeah. And, you know, is Jamie pulling it off? And, you know.
Right.
I love these sweeping of Lollybrook. Yeah. It's just...
This went through, this was like one of those scenes we talked about ad nauseum, about how we light this friggin' wagon on fire.
The production of
this was maddening.
Is it a pipe? Is it a cigarette? Did they have cigarettes back then? No, it's
originally it was like, oh, he throws a cigarette into the thing. Well, did they have cigarettes? No, they didn't have cigarettes.
No, it's a pipe. I believe
then we
David
about
Brown.
Cigars, right? And then cigars we even went, well, they didn't really even have cigars.
And how many times we shot this? The amazing thing is sometimes the time limits us with what we can shoot, and shooting fire always adds additional time. So,
yeah, and part of the sacrifice that gets made here, unfortunately, is this thing with the pipe, because a pipe you have to kind of tap it out.
Tap it out, yeah.
It's a more deliberate, longer act than it is to toss a cigarette or toss a cigar into the hay and he could walk away. He had to actually stand there and kind of blow on it.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit more.
And that when we had to play with that, because it was, is this deliberate or is it not deliberate?
Intention.
And it had to be deliberate.
I know Matt was supervising the shooting of this episode, and I remember there was a discussion about how many men were there when they had this fight scene, because Jamie had to fight off these guys, and it had to be realistic that...
Yeah, when does it get out of control?
When does it get out of control?
When would they have just overwhelmed him? And, you know, you don't. I'm always trying to keep the fighting and the action down to something believable, so it doesn't seem superhuman.
Right.
Well, that's the key. Is we love that Jamie is superhuman in a way, but we want it to be somewhat realistic, and not some kung fu movie.
Because there's a version of this show where Jamie runs up that wall and flips over, and kicks these guys in the head. You know?
Exactly.
But we're not doing that show. It's like we're doing this show.
Yeah, and we rehearsed this part quite a bit.
Quite a bit.
The reactions of it and how he could overwhelm them. And he is waving the gun around, so he does hold people at bay.
Yeah.
Stand down, all of you.
This is Doug Henshall, who's a really, really good actor playing Macquarie. He's probably aren't familiar with his name in the States, but in the UK, he's been in a lot of great shows, and he's very well known. And I was with him in a restaurant once when many women came up to him, and he was very modest, but many women came up to him and greeted him and said hello. And that was before we started shooting, and I was like, oh, I think we have the right guy here. Everyone seems to know him, and he's just the nicest guy.
I hope he took all their phone numbers.
Yeah.
No, we were watching the World Cup, and he was very well behaved.
He has a good presence about him, and he and Sam got along real well.
They did.
Yeah. They had a good chemistry.
Yeah, it's a nice pairing, these two.
Yeah.
Here's where we see a familiar face.
And then back to Horrocks. I don't remember at what point in the process we said to bring Horrocks into this story. Was it there from the outline?
I'm trying to remember.
I kind of feel like it developed.
I think it developed because we thought, is Horrocks since he...
Maybe another drink and you guys can figure
it
out.
We needed, you know, to up the stakes and...
I think there was a sense that the watch thing, there needed to be another element of danger.
Well, we also, once again, is that once you see the scenes, there were more scenes in 9 that we had to actually trim for time.
Right.
That you see how great Lachlan is, and you go, let's bring him back.
Yeah, you want
to
see
that. And there was the moment where you're like, this is the place he would come back.
We want to see that guy again.
He's so awesome. Oh, he's so awesome.
And that aspect is much more familiar as just working in television. When you're watching the show, you're watching dailies, and suddenly someone pops out in the cast, and even a guest cast, and then you want to bring that character back, write more for them, and then you kind of see shows evolve in that way because you see potential.
Yeah.
He was so magnetic. His eyes were so intense, and he didn't break character. And when he spoke to you on the set, he just spoke in that low, you know, threatening voice. And I remember one time he sort of cornered me to ask me a question, And I was so like, he actually scared me, and I couldn't get out of the conversation, and I missed lunch. And my buddies were all like, what happened?
Tony never missed lunch?
Oh my God. I never missed lunch. And they were like, where were you? And I said, I was talking to Horrocks, and I could not get away.
Our best shots, Le Havre Bridge. The day's right. We take just after they cross under the bridge. That's a fine spot for an ambush.
He's also Irish.
Yeah.
And we decided at
we
first.
We
changed him because Horrocks was supposed to be.
He's English.
English. And we changed him to an Irishman. And it was common for Irish to fight with the English army and to be. And the watch was comprised of many different
nationalities. I do have to say, I mean, seriously, how cute is Wee James?
Oh, super
it's
cute.
The whole time we're shooting this, it was hard to keep people away from just, you know.
Super cute.
He's so cute. And he did an amazingly good job.
Oh, he was great.
He's really laughing.
This might have been when I walked, one of those moments I walked up on just before you called rap again.
Right.
I did that on the previous episode. I walked up and I got to Lollybrook,
yeah.
And it was like, and that's it. And everyone go home.
No,
and it was like,
well,
I just
you
drove
know
all
why?
The way
you
out
know
here.
Why? Because the director had told everyone, we're going to finish early today so everyone can go home and watch the World Cup.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden, England was playing today. Oh, England was playing. When Ron drove up and got out of the car, the faces on the crew were like, oh no.
We're stuck.
And. You only kept us a little while longer.
Ron's like,
but
let's do some shooting.
Yeah.
Hey, I got some thoughts. Let's do something different.
Oh my God.
I had no idea, but I do remember the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Sort of like.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
no, it's
hi,
like,
Ron.
Should I tell him? Should I tell
Great
him that
you.
There might be a sword to the back if he keeps us too long tonight?
By the way, any scene with these two in it is a good scene.
That's
I have
gold.
To say. They are gold.
Well, also here we deviated a little from the book because in the book I believe there was a midwife who takes care
of
Jenny.
Yeah.
And of course we, you know, wanted to give the action more to our main character, Claire, and we thought it would be nice for their relationship to deepen that they had to be in this crisis together, the two women. And Claire's a nurse, but she was a combat nurse in the war. She was not a she seemed like two babies be born, and she doesn't really know what she's doing, but she knows enough to help. But we thought that'd be a good challenge for her to sort of be a little thrown for a loop by this, and yet, you know, have to.
He's in the wrong position.
Have to help.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember in the book when Ginny is delivering the baby. What's going on in the rest? Is it just the guys are just waiting downstairs? There's nothing. There's not another story going on.
I don't think
right?
there is.
Yeah, there.
We
they're,
wanted to. You were you from the very beginning, Tony. I remember you were always in love with the cross cutting that's coming up later.
Oh yeah.
That while she's being born, we're cutting to the watch and we're cutting to the action, which I think is really great and helps the structure of this enormously.
And in the book, she learns how to do this from birthing the foal.
Oh,
back
oh right in the book.
Since we didn't do that, we needed another, you know, kind of a figure out a new way of doing it.
And she delivered a foal, right?
Yes.
And why did she do that?
She was there and Old Alec.
Old Alec.
Yeah.
Right.
And then remember, that's where Colm gives her the rosary for doing that.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
All these scenes with the pregnancy belly and the prosthetic and the baby hump and, you know, it was all very complicated stuff. And a lot of time in production meetings and a lot of sidebar conversations. And there are sections like that's a real.
We actually got a real pregnant woman to come in, and these were filmed at different times, but we went back in because you wanted some more physical.
Right.
And we got in there, and not me personally, but the actress got in there and really pushed down it. And it was
the insert shots of Claire's hand on the belly.
And we shot almost at the end of our shoot.
I mean, the great irony is that when it was the prosthetic belly and Kat was manipulating it, it didn't look like she was pressing as hard as her reaction was.
Yeah.
So then we did it with a real pregnant woman and pushed much.
Well,
because the woman was
when
like,
we were
go
doing
for
it, we used a real midwife and she said, "How hard do you want me to go?" And we go, "As hard as you can." She goes, "Well, I can go really hard." We're like, "Oh my God!" We were so afraid,
so scared,
and the woman who was pregnant was like, "I'm good, I'm good." It was quite surreal in that.
So throughout this episode, there's a mixture of prosthetic belly on Jenny, Sometimes when she's wearing the shift, it's just yeah. like a strap-on device.
Yes. Right.
Then there's a formal prosthetic that was crafted and sculpted by people who do that kind of work. We have really good artisans who do that kind of makeup. And then there's a real pregnant woman.
Yes.
So this is right. really
a combination
amalgam.
Of three, yes.
And yeah. we had Dr. Claire McRody. She was on the set with us and gave us some great medical advice about what they would do in that time.
I love this part of the scene where Horrocks is walking around his father, who had been his father's study.
Right.
And we were talking about it, and I asked him, I said, you know what, Horrocks would probably steal something.
Yes.
And so he grabs this thing and...
And he steals it.
And it's a compass.
Ah.
That was your
brother.
Yeah, because there was a whole little thing he had of a powder horn.
Yeah, he had a powder... That's your powder horn. Remember yeah. that? The snuff box. Tell the story.
A ram's horn snuff.
You, snuff box.
You yeah. love that.
And actually, I got the idea from watching reality television. It was a show about auctions in Scotland, and some people were bidding on an antique ram's horn snuff. And I put it in the episode. It got cut out, but see.
Yeah, because the story was he had it.
He had it.
He showed it to Jamie, and yeah. Jamie said, that's pretty expensive. And then it turned out Horrocks had stolen it from
yes.
a British officer.
Right. His commanding right. officer.
And that's why I told him, hey, it'd be nice if you stole something else.
Oh,
yeah.
nice.
But in editing, it was just looking for, I think the show was long. And
we cut it out, I think, also to highlight the watch later because it was too many props. It was like the special ram horn thing.
Oh, that's right.
And then the watch,
right.
and we wanted to really focus on the watch.
Yeah.
I
want to see my
face again. It's good. These two are good together, too. It's a lot of good pairings
Very
in this
good.
Episode. Claire and Jenny, Horrocks and Jamie yeah. and Macquarie. It's nice.
It's like we're cutting from the men to the women,
underneath the shift. This is just a strap-on thing that's literally tied under there. That's just like a big hump.
And Metin, our director, Metin Hussein, built this shot in, and you'll see it coming up. It's just... it's one of my favorite shots.
Yeah, right there where you see the silhouette.
The silhouette with the light coming through. It just is...
Yeah, the costume lets the light come through, but then Metin highlights it, and it's really nice.
It's a great shot.
It's just a bit like wind in your belly. Later, you start to feel the child move, and...
Yes. Now, this is all kind of drawn from the book,
Most
right?
of this dialogue here, I augmented it a little bit, but most of this is from the book. I just thought it was a beautiful speech that Diana wrote and kept it in. And just, you know, it's reflecting on Claire because, of course, she can't yeah. have children. And for her to ask, what's it like, and listen to this, is you see the on her face how much she wants it and dreams about it. And
you get down on your knees and... promise God anything he asks if he'll just keep them safe.
Oh. A lot of really great looks.
Yeah.
This is the shot we're talking about coming up here. Yeah.
That's great.
It's just such
yeah,
a great
very
shot.
Natural.
And the child moves a lot.
That's a good eye. That's a really good eye to see
yeah.
that shot.
I mean, he saw it in his head when we were in prep.
Really? He saw it in prep?
And he knew he wanted to do it.
Nice.
He knew how he wanted to do it.
We knew
we weren't going to show her, you know, without the gown.
Uh-huh.
So he had it in his mind what he wanted to do. And we get a lot of talented people on this show, and it's nice when it all comes together.
Very nice. Speaking of talent, I want to give a shout out to Margaret Graham, our script supervisor, who takes care of the writer's best friend on the set because she takes care of the words and makes sure that they say the lines.
Make sure they say them right.
They say them right. And also our Carol Ann Crawford, who helps us with
our dialect coach,
but she also goes through the scripts and helps us to put in the authentic Scottish dialogue from the period. If we try to do as much of as we can on our own, but then she smooths it out and makes it just kicks it up a notch for us.
One of the nicest
ladies.
Yeah.
And then this set was a particularly hot
set.
And
hot set.
I just remember them just looking at them, and they were just dripping wet because so hot under the
Very
lights.
Hot.
And they're troopers. They've got that Scottish whatever the work ethic, and they.
We had what we would call a ventilation issue on this.
Yeah,
remember
I talked
that?
About a little bit in the previous podcast. This set got too hot. We had to stop. We had to figure it out.
Yeah.
So just one of those things where the time of year we were shooting was warmer than the normal freezing cold Scotland.
Yeah.
Ventilation on the set, the size of the set. It was a new set. It was like and people in heavy wool costumes, and it just got to a point where we had to stop and figure out, okay, we got to cool this set down.
Yeah, welcome to summer in
Scotland. Yeah, summer in Scotland.
Scotland doesn't normally, what we were told is they don't have a summer, so no one planned ahead.
Well, I remember shooting, I directed an episode of Caprica, and when I did that episode in Vancouver, it was literally a day that set records for how hot
Vancouver had
ever been in history, and all of us on that soundstage sweating and dying, and there was no AC, and they had those big yellow tubes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Which you'd have to turn off to run.
Yeah, because you can shoot with them on, yeah.
And then as soon as you'd call cut, all of us would go over to this tube and stand in front of it to get the ice cold air coming in. It was just like the most miserable experience.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing all the little teeny things that go in to making these shows that you have to kind of corral all these things to do it.
Right.
And then you add Scotland, period piece, wool up, you know, I mean, just all the millions of little details that go into this. You know, it's a great job.
Well, it's great. You know, it's interesting.
Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things I like about the podcast is sitting here and having one last time to talk about this episode in detail.
Yeah.
And to remember what it was to shoot that scene.
Yeah.
The pre-production conversation.
Right.
The original outline, because we'll never really think about it like that ever again.
No.
We're
halfway
through.
It's such a giant mosaic of all these different pieces that then coalesce into this drama.
Right.
That will live forever. Like, this drama will outlive all of us. It'll live in various forms. But only we kind of remember all these different tiles that went into this mosaic.
Yeah. Right. That's
And we had talked about this a little bit, is that, you know, there's one thing to write the page.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's in a book, it's just that's what it is. But when you write the page, that's the first step.
Yeah.
And then you do the meetings, and then you do production, and then you film it, and then it goes to editing, and then it's finally, so there's three pieces or four pieces to get it to this.
Yeah, and it's amazing, because at a certain point you lose, or at least I find, maybe you guys have a different experience, I lose contact with all of that, and then I'll watch the episode again, somebody will show it to me, or I'll have to go back and look at it, or whatever, and it's all kind of gone, and now it's just sort of what this is, and it's almost like foreign to me, because, you know, the final product, I'm going to watch once or twice.
Exactly.
I might watch that actual last, you know, filmed episode. It's so far at the end of the tale. I'll watch that at the very end once, but most of my experience is before that.
Yes.
And I have sort of memories of these other things, and then I'll watch this, like, say I watch this episode 2-3 years from now. I'll accept it as a drama on its own terms, but it's almost like a different show.
It is.
It's almost like I'm not connected with this story anymore. I'm connected with that production meeting. I'm connected with that time in the writer's room. I'm connected with that time in the trailer.
I'm dealing
with Sam's fucking hair. You know, it's like I'm dealing I'm connected to those things, but not necessarily this complete story.
Right. In a weird way, these are our memories. These are our memories of the show. You know?
Yeah, Tony, when you look at something like this, I mean, you know, you weren't on the set for this particular show, but when you're looking at a show and you watch it later, do you remember, oh yeah, I was standing to the left of that camera, or
sometimes
I
do. Sometimes I do, but it's a credit to our actors that this particular set of actors is so good that if I find myself watching, say when I'm in the editing room, even with you occasionally, if I'm swept up in the story and I forget to take notes, I'm supposed to be taking notes for editing or something, and I forget, then I know that the actors are doing their job and that I'm caught up in it. But it definitely happens when I'm watching other shows. When I can hardly enjoy TV because I watch it thinking, oh, I would have written this differently.
Yeah.
I'm rewriting it in my head as I'm watching it. And this, you know, I'm not rewriting it in my head because it was the last version of what we wanted.
I find watching other hour dramas distracting. I mean,
there's
some of them I really love. Like, I love Vikings, I love Mad Men, you know, I love a lot of these shows, but there's always a second part of my brain that's counting sets and going,
that's exactly what it is.
They're back on that. Mm-hmm. Oh, I bet that's a redress of that thing. And
all right. Hey, how did they do that?
How did they get that?
How did they get it? Yeah.
Just analyzing instead of, like, enjoying.
Yeah.
We do have to turn off.
It's hard to turn off.
Now, when I watch a half-hour sitcom, That part of my brain doesn't even engage.
Right.
I don't know
that's
how
a
that
different,
works.
Because that's a different animal. World. Yeah, it's totally different.
Yeah. I look at Seinfeld and, you know, and I just sort of look at it and I'm amazed. And I'm like, how the fuck did they do this show? And I have no idea. And I love the fact that I have no idea how they made this piece of television.
As we're talking about Seinfeld and the most emotional part of the scene.
A lot of conversation about this moment, about Jamie's reaction.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
A lot of sort of debate and how should he react? Should he not react?
Yeah.
How would the King of Men accept this information?
Yeah.
You know, does it affect
him? And we, this is what we finally came to, is that it's she leaves...
And then he sits down.
And it was does he stand? What does he do? And the decision was he sits down. There's also the carrying of the gun coming to this scene. For those of you who cannot see the rain, it was pouring.
It was raining, that's right.
It poured. We had a production delay of 2 hours. Do you remember that? You actually, I think it was one of your last days on set.
I visited the set.
And it just poured. Remember, we had rivers of water.
Yes.
And we finally got to shoot it.
It's so weird that there are all those times when it's raining on set, and then you look at the film and you can't see the rain.
You can't.
No.
Even in HD, and you know, you're just like, wow.
In fact, when we want it to rain, we have to add rain.
It's so bizarre.
So that
or
you can
snow,
see it.
But
because
I'm
going
not
into this project, I remember in the early days of scouting in Scotland, I remember coming to Scotland, very early days with John Dahl and Gary Steele, and we're there looking at locations. And it would suddenly rain, and then it would be sunshine, and then it would rain, and it would be sunshine. And I remember standing there going, how are we going to do this? Oh, my God, the continuity is going to be all over the place. And I was scared.
Yeah.
And then you watch the show, and you can't tell half the time when it's raining.
Right.
Well, the strangest thing.
It's as a lot of the Scots like to say, this would be a soft rain.
Right, because there's big rain coming up.
There's
you know,
big, there's heavy
remember,
rain coming.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you'll tell them when the big rain comes. But there's a scene where they look like drowned
and
rats.
But there's a soft. This is soft rain. And those of us who are Angelinos, we just know of rain.
There's
no soft rain. And they have different textures of rain in Scotland because they have so much of it.
Yeah.
And soft rain doesn't appear on screen, especially if you're using.
Yeah, it's like
it's the aperture of the. I mean, to get technical, it's the aperture of the
right.
The
I mean, I'm coming to realize that anytime I've ever seen rain on camera, it must be because they're adding rain.
Yes,
that there's never any natural rain that you can actually see on camera.
And it's normally right around a football game that you go, "Hey, it should be raining during a football game."
This was interesting because I believe originally Jamie killed him.
Yes.
And
yes.
then I think it was you, Ron, or was it
I
Ron?
Remember.
I can't remember now. Who had the brilliant idea? But I think it was Ron that said, or was he?
I don't know, but we always give the brilliant ideas to Ron
because that's easy.
Because we still want paychecks. That's
right.
Anyway, it was the decision was made to make it Ian. We thought it'd be more an interesting choice because he did used to be a warrior.
You're
waiting
for Jamie to kill the guy.
I will say this: what we did do is. I was in Scotland for a long time, and you guys were meeting, and I came back, and there was this big debate of whether he died or not, and I literally said, why can't Jamie would just kill the guy. He's threatening the family. And everybody's like, oh, booger's back. And then Ron flipped it to, well, no, it should be Ian who kills him. And then we were like, because I wanted to.
And the blood on the sword, I remember that was your idea.
It was definitely
the blood
your,
on the sword, and that Jamie offers to wipe. Yeah, I do remember.
Yeah.
I'll tell you when it's my idea. I'll definitely take credit when it's my idea, but this was not my idea, and I have to.
The temptation is you look back at these moments, you say, oh, yeah, I thought of that.
No.
And then you go, no, actually, you didn't.
Well, that's kind of the nice thing about our room is that the best idea. We usually let the best idea surface because we throw rocks.
The best idea win.
Rocks at all the ideas and the one that lives.
At the beginning, when I started at Trek, that was Ira, who was not here, but Ira Bear taught me that the best idea in the room wins.
And you taught me that.
And then I taught you. Well, that's
you
the
know
way I was
that,
trained.
You know that when you give an idea to someone, that idea, you're going to get ideas back from them that they don't get credit for, and that a good staff, that's the measure of a good staff. No one's interested in saying whose idea it was because you know you're all gonna credit each other, and that it just makes a better show.
Yeah, because a good staff is not about keeping score.
No.
It's not about keeping score. It's just about what you end up with.
The score, it comes on screen.
Yeah.
You know, the best, we go, yes, we're proud of that.
It's a good show, we all win. Yeah. It's a bad show, we all lost.
If it's a bad show, I'm like, he wrote it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, he fucked that up.
Well, a bad show, Ron Moore.
A bad show, ultimately, is my fault.
So we went round and round about this in rehearsals, and what we normally see in a show is a woman on a bed giving birth, push.
I've seen that a million times.
And you know, stay with me.
stay with me.
It's a running joke. We'll tell you later. And Metten really said, no, this is not. And do you remember in the meeting we had in David Brown's office? And Metten grabbed me.
Oh, to demonstrate?
To demonstrate how it was going to work.
Right.
And I could see you and Meryl and David Brown, and it was horrifying because the look on my face was,
Matt was playing the role of
Jenny. Demonstrated the birthing, but he used Matt as his pregnant dummy to show how Claire would help Jenny have the baby.
Metten was Claire, Matt was Jenny, and a whole like scene was acted out.
I've seen you taken by surprise.
Yes.
I've never seen
that. That was the best part.
I wish I had my camera.
That they hadn't rehearsed it.
No.
And Matt's sort of like... I guess I should just go with this.
I was horrified. And the look on your face was even more shocking. Like, what are you doing?
Are you doing this?
By the way, I think we squeezed Sonny in there. I don't think he comes in this segment of
the book. It's later.
We knew that it was one of those iconic things. We all really liked it, and we wanted to find a place to get Sonny in there.
You remember how many times we had the conversation of, where are we going to put Sonny?
Well, it was kind of like Donus the horse. We knew we needed Donus, but we had to find out. Like, put him in your episode. No, put him in your episode.
Oh, well, that reminds me. Sorry to go back an episode, but that Anne and I didn't even talk about. You know, the speech that Jamie says, you know, the honesty and lies speech.
Oh, right.
The big thing that originally in the book is during the wedding, and it was scripted during the wedding, that, you know, there can be secrets, but let's not have
lies. Yes.
Right. And that was in the wedding, and when that episode aired, a lot of fans went,
They were asking about it,
And I forgot, when we were doing the podcast, we put that in. We never forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
That
line
had to live, and that does live in that previous episode.
There are certain things that Meryl will never let us live down. I mean, we have to put them
in. That will survive somehow, way. Side note on Ian, you know, you've seen Ian throughout these two episodes. The actor has to, you know, he had a green sock on his from his knee down to his foot, and then he had to put his knee into that peg leg and stump around on it. And it was painful and difficult.
It was the first day of him watching him walk was physically painful for everybody watching him walk because but once he got used to it. Stephen Krieger, the actor, did a wonderful job. Just moved around like you could not believe how well he moved on this thing.
Now this scene, I don't even know how to get into this scene. Technically, this is a problematic scene that Michael Halloran and I, who's one of our editors who I've worked with for years, struggle with in the editing room.
We've never referred to him as his full name.
Right. Once Jamie sits down at this table, we were looking at this over and over again in the editing bay and trying to figure out what was wrong with this scene. Because you've got McQuarrie at one end of the table, Jamie at the other end of the table. You've got
Ian
in
the
center.
Middle. Yeah.
Now, the problem happens here. Every time Ian starts looking from one guy to the other.
Yes.
And you start feeling like Ian's looking the wrong direction. Like, now we're just back and forth between McQuarrie and Jamie, right? And in a minute here, we're going to go to Stephen, and then he's going to be looking left or right. And as this scene develops, you start feeling like he's looking in the wrong direction. And we couldn't figure out why, because he wasn't. The actor was not making a mistake. Like, there. Which way is he looking? Who's he looking at?
He would be looking at McQuarrie there.
He's looking at McQuarrie. Okay, there's Jamie.
Yeah.
Jamie and McQuarrie, they're at opposite ends. Right, in the shoulder, Jamie looks up.
Yeah.
There's McQuarrie. The problem was, we eventually, like right there, you kind of feel you're in the wrong area. Like, yeah. Wait a minute, I'm on the wrong side.
The where camera,
Jamie?
What happened was
they had mistakenly placed
the camera in the wrong
position. Many years ago, Steve McNutt, who was our DP on Battlestar Galactica, told me when I was getting ready to direct an episode, he said, one of the most difficult things for a director is when actors are sitting around a table.
Yes.
He said, it becomes math. And where you put the camera is like literally geometry and math. You have to be very careful on eye lines and you're moving around a table. It's like, And this was just one of those things where they happened to put the camera
on the wrong shoulder.
Yep. And it screwed up his coverage, like right there. He should be looking the other direction.
Yeah. It's the camera over
the camera
his shoulder.
Over
his shoulder.
But it took us a good couple of hours of Mikey O staring at this going, why? I don't get it. Why am I not in the wrong spot? And it was just a very simple, like right there, he shouldn't be on that shoulder. He should be on the
other
shoulder.
Yes, he should be on the other shoulder.
And we tried to minimize it in the final cut of the episode, but it was just a very simple mistake made on the set.
You know, and it's weird because, you know, as producers, that's something we don't get into, you know, where they're placing the camera at that moment. But you're right. It's crossing the line,
it's just shifting point of view, and the audience intuitively kind of goes, shouldn't he be looking the other direction?
Mm. Yeah,
it kind of takes you out of the scene a little bit.
Yeah.
You're kind of confused for a minute which way he's looking.
But I think if we weren't talking about it, Mikey did a nice job.
We minimized it
as
much as possible, but there's still a couple of moments in there where you sort of go, isn't he looking the wrong way?
And tables are always difficult in the sense of, because there is a line, and then you add another person, and then there's another line, and then you add another person, and then there's another line. And it just keeps
ever
evolving. Because
they're fixed to this square, the rectangle, and which direction they're looking really does matter. If you're shooting over someone's shoulder on the right, and then suddenly you're on the left, it'll screw up where you think they should be looking.
And you do start getting lost
as a
viewer. This is what I was talking about, is that we decided to, one, she would be on the floor.
Yeah, straw.
With straw on the ground. I mean, we're not, we do...
In front of the fire, because that was the warmest place.
I love that
place.
Detail. I love the straw.
The straw and the detail.
I love that.
And why they do that is because of the fluid, the blood, and all the things that come out.
Right. They wanted to keep it.
And a hygienic way to clean up.
This is a really well-lit scene.
Absolutely.
In terms of... I completely believe that there's sunlight outside that window.
Yeah.
This feels like a location to me.
It does.
And there's Sonny the Snake.
There it is. I also love that this is a little side hallway in Lollybrook, but it's still, you know, all the details there. I mean, we go out, we don't half-ass anything.
No.
You know, that's the nice thing about Outlander is that everybody takes so much pride
in their department. I haven't seen one single person that was burnt out or jaded or just phoned it in. Never. And sadly, I do see a little bit of that sometimes in L.A. I think people that have done it for years and years and just like it's a cookie cutter thing. And here we really were fortunate to have a crew that they're all very passionate about the show. They all give 110%. Every time.
And the actors and the directors will give the scene space. There's air in this scene. You could cut this scene down to nothing. He could come and say goodbye and they kiss and they walk out.
Yeah.
But playing the moments, playing the emotional beats, playing all the little looks between them, letting the scene breathe is one of the joys, I think, of the show.
It's a luxury.
And that comes from you know, the network. And you, and the fact that if I ever wrote a 6-page scene on another network show,
a broadcast show,
it would never happen.
No.
They would go, are you out of your mind?
This is way too long.
But here we could have 6 or 7 page scenes that really just you can go for it.
Enjoy it.
There's a long scene. Here's your rain scene, Matt.
Here's
real
Matt,
rain.
Now you can see it.
I remember you texted me.
You can see the rain.
You said this is the wettest day that Scotland has had in like 5 years.
It still doesn't look as wet as it was.
We were so wet. I just want to say we were so wet. We had to stop this scene 4 or 5 times
because of the rain.
Yeah,
Oh, okay, Tony, talk about this
and
watch.
And here's where...
Yeah, the watch. Yeah. Do the watch.
How'd you come up with the watch? I don't even know how I came up with this. I really don't. Somewhere in the middle of the night when I was writing, and I love the... I think we needed to have title cards, and which are little Easter eggs.
Oh, sure. Blame Ron.
And
this came out of the title card?
No, well, I Googled somehow, because the episode's called The Watch, and I thought it might be cool if he had a watch. I thought it was just going to be a pocket watch, a cool pocket watch. But when I Googled pocket watches 1700s, this skull watch came up, and in real history, it was designed by Mary Queen of Scots, and it had a quote on it that just fit the episode perfectly. So I fought like crazy because at first they were like, we have to make our own. We can't go buy a watch. I'm like, go to a Harley Davidson shop. They have skull watches. Just buy one. And they were like, we can't because of copyright and all that. The design, we have to make it.
And
it
was also
cost
really
a huge amount of money. And I remember, you know, that Gary Steele is my hero and also David Brown for understanding why it was so important and allowing us to have it made. I think after I said, if it's too expensive, I will pay for it myself out of my paycheck, because that's how bad I wanted it and how crazy I am. But they made it. They made it from scratch. They copied the one that Mary Queen of Scots made, and I love it. And to me, that was in every episode. You have one thing that's that thing that you feel like if it leaves the episode, it just loses all its magic. And for me, I know it's a small moment, but he shows him that watch. That for me is the magic moment that made this whole episode work.
And because it became like a thing, I was conspiring. Marilyn and I kept saying, okay,
oh,
now
yes.
When I cut the episode, the first cut, you have to cut the watch out.
Yeah, completely out. Completely out.
Just to torture Tony.
Yeah.
So that she has a heart attack.
Oh, no.
And then
no.
I kind of forgot about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. The practical joke, you forget
I
about.
I never, like, actually did it.
I was on the phone to Alicia Bassett, who is our post-production supervisor, and I said, you make sure that watch is in and make sure it's the title card. We had to shoot the title card
at the end of the shoot, and we had to get this robotic arm in just to shoot your title card because we couldn't hold the camera steady enough. So
true,
we, so David Brown, your hero, had to fly in a robot. Remember that?
Yep, I remember. Now this whole ambush.
I want that watch when the show is
in eight years or more, when the show's done.
I want that watch.
It's not ending up on the auction.
So this is wonderful. Yeah. I credit Metten, the director here, because he really described.
He fought for this too.
He fought from the very first meeting. He said, "I just want them crawling around on the floor with so much pain and so much."
This is essentially kind of what we were talking about earlier is. He grabbed me and this is how
it's
he.
It's when she's. It's coming up. She's going to sit on her lap.
We found this location on an estate just south of Glasgow, and it's an amazing estate, Barskimming, and we just fell in love with it because we could do so much there.
A lot of conversation about how much of the ambush we were going to shoot, how much you would see. I remember, tell me if I'm wrong, I remember in the writer's room saying I didn't want to see any of it. It was always going to cut out on fire.
Yeah.
I always said that. And then we kind of like said, well, let's shoot more of the ambush.
The idea is always to, you need to shoot a little more. Because if you end up with just what you ask for, sometimes you'll want more.
We have a name for showrunners like you, elephants. Because what happens is, and this is to your credit, so that you have a vision in the beginning and you state it. And you did state from the very beginning, I want the ambush to just be boom and cut out. And then we kind of go, are you sure you don't want to see a little more? And then we sneak it in the script, and we sneak it in the shooting, and we hope that if it's good enough, maybe you can change your mind. And sometimes in the final edit, you go right back to, you're an elephant, you remember.
Really?
And you go right back to, here's how I wanted it. And I mean, a lot of times, most of the time, you're right, and we have to respect that that was your original vision, and it works here.
Oh,
works
but I
beautifully.
Hate that that's who I am.
No,
oh,
no,
Jesus,
it's
I hate
not
that.
A bad thing. It's
no,
true
it is,
not.
Because I should,
what?
No,
no but,
because my job is to,
I know, but,
to find the best idea, and I shouldn't
yeah,
hang on to
do,
that idea through the whole process.
But you do that in the room if there is a better
it
idea.
Should be like,
but a
okay.
showrunner has to stick with their vision, because I've worked with a lot of showrunners, and the worst ones are the ones that don't know what they want. And if they keep changing their mind, it's like the general of an army. Go this way, go that way. You don't trust that person and won't follow them. So it's a good thing.
Well, and also, you know, being on set is You know, you could go, yes, you can shoot right up to what Ron asked for, and
yeah.
me being on there, go, no, we need to give him a little more, because
we
you
have
can't
the
go,
option of both
but you
things.
can't go back.
Yeah, you can't
yeah,
add
you can't,
on.
I can't go back there with 45 guys
right.
and horses, so I need to give him
it's
more.
Too much, yeah.
Right.
Better
to give him too much, because the time he calls me up and goes, why don't I have
why
more?
Exactly.
I blame Tony.
No.
Well, that's why I like, you know, one of the struggles you have in the production process is the scripts are always long.
Yep.
And they're always wanting to cut back. And I'm always taking a lot of heat about how long the scripts are, that I allow the scripts
yes.
on shows to be too long, because I like choices. I like
right.
having too much material and then figuring out, oh, here's where it is. And, you know, so I always want more
yeah.
because I the process of sitting in the editing bay is always winnowing down.
Yeah.
If you have too little, then you're screwed.
Well, and that's one thing because I sit with Mikey, too, and I learned from asking, hey, Mikey, what does Ron want? You know, and he's like, no, sometimes he wants, hey, do we have this? Do we have that? And when you don't have it,
right.
is
yeah,
the problem.
Then you're like, oh, man.
And with this particular show, what I've learned is we need to get it when we're here.
Right.
Because we can't
go
back.
We can't
go
back.
It's
hard to go back. You're not in Burbank where you can go, hey,
yep.
reassemble
yep.
that set.
Yes.
We'll go over
yep.
and grab a
yep.
shot. It's like, no, we were 3 hours up in the Highlands.
Yep. Yes.
Can't ever go
it's
back
it's not a
there
two-hander again. On Law & Order. It's
no.
a 50 people in the middle
that's
of the Highlands.
Deal.
Right.
Yes. So it's more is always better.
I love the two women here.
How many times?
I love them
this is the
together.
Bracelets.
This is the bracelets, and
yeah.
the bracelets
many,
is another.
How many episodes did the bracelets go to
bracelets.
Before they landed in there?
Right, they moved around
we,
all the
we
time.
We needed
yeah.
them in Matt's episode 114,
that's right.
and
yeah.
Matt, I think it was your idea to get them in here so that we could put them in.
Because
so
we need
have
we'll,
them.
We'll,
we
we'll need them to play later.
You'll see
yeah.
how they play later, but.
Every day for 4 years, I stared at that very road. Welcome home. He always does.
Laura Donnelly.
Oh,
I mean,
she's,
my God.
She's
so
amazing.
I love her.
She's one of those ones where we saw her and we just went, that's Jenny. There's just no.
Belonged to my mother.
Yeah, finally the bracelets.
And I think Terry
the bracelets.
Had the gold bracelets, didn't she, I believe?
I couldn't tell you where the bracelets came from. I should, but I can't.
J. Crew online.
J. Crew.
No, just
if you go to Amazon, you can get the
yeah,
bracelets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know we had to rush to get them ready because we weren't prepared to see them until 114. And,
Unique.
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 Never would say
who. Oh, yeah, and this, yeah, backfilling
yeah.
the whole Murtaugh.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But she just smiled like a
which you just, that was a spoiler.
If you're listening
if
to
you're
the
listening,
podcast,
you're
guys,
positive,
you're, like,
you're on board
no
anyway.
Don't be worrying about spoilers.
Yeah, we don't, yeah.
I love the dogs, too.
What I like here,
I love the dogs.
I love the dogs. In fact, I have pictures of me holding that dog, the little one. And I wanted to take him back to the States. Here's a shot that we were trying to do a cheat, obviously, and you think that it's Jamie coming, and I love the slow motion, I love them. You think Jamie and Ian are coming back.
You sort of do. This is one of those moments I sort of yeah. always go, they're never going to buy it. They're
no.
never going to think it's Jamie.
Well, we argued
because
about
if it was
yeah,
Jamie,
yeah.
we would show him immediately.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
We would never try to hide him. So I'm always sort of tortured by the... I'm always second-guessing those
well,
kind of decisions.
That's why we showed him so fast, though.
And it's like I'm sitting there going, if I'm in the audience, I know it's not Jamie because they didn't show me his face.
Yes.
And I'm always...
I don't
trying.
Think the audiences are thinking.
You don't think so?
No,
no it's
I
funny because I thought that too.
I don't
I
know.
That too.
I think they're along for the ride, and if you haven't done your job right, they're thinking of those kind of things. But if they've been with us for 50 minutes, 55 minutes, whatever this is, in that last shot, I don't think they shouldn't be using their minds. They're thinking from their.
Well, that's true. They should.
Their heart.
Yes. They should
by the way, she, Tony put her hand on her heart
yes.
there.
Yeah,
they
I
should just
I think,
be in it.
This is radio.
Yeah.
She
It's true. It's true.
I think I always default to the place of I'm watching this, and then the analytical part of my brain.
No.
Oh, they're not showing me his face because it's not him.
But no, that's true. But welcome to the writer's room. That's what we do all the time. It's like, hey, get your head out of your head.
And then the argument of logic versus emotion. But my theory is that if you're caught up in the emotion in it, you're not going to be analyzing it as you go.
Yes.
Hope.
No, but if we do that. We do that all the time. Yeah. We have the people who are the logic police.
We need
and then
both.
We need the emotion police.
Because you don't want a piece of logic to take you out.
I love that. She's down the, like, is he coming home? Uh-oh.
Good episode.
Yes.
I think that's a good one. All right. Well, thank you, Tony. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you
at home for following along. And we will talk to you again soon for episode 114, The Search.
The Search.
Slancha.
Yes. Last drink here in the credits.
Cheers.
We're going to keep drinking.
And
good night and good luck.